The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt Boo!
Media Productions. You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back. This week, it's Wednesday. Matt, we're here. Another episode of Why It Ended. We're coming off of last week's crazy episode where I'm still getting tweets and freaking DMs and a bunch of people asking questions about the crazy Buff Bagwell story. How you feeling, bro?
I'm feeling like, as Buff might say, I have good news and I have bad news. What a freaking show that was, guys.
Computers. Were you expecting to go into that with the word computers on your mind all week?
I had no... If you listen to it, I go, what do you mean? Like, I literally had no fucking idea what he was talking about.
Do you think he was sweating during that? Like, he was really getting into his speaking to us. Like, I feel like it was some sweat pouring down his forehead when he was talking to us.
He's just as passionate about it as he was a while ago. And the part of the interview that gets me is when you ask what he would do if he saw Jim Ross, and he said he would tackle him. And I start to ask the next question, but I can't because I just start laughing. I picture Buff just running across a room and tackling Jim Ross.
But the way he worded it was that he would have to. Like, he has no choice. Like, he has to tackle him. Well, he's a very intense guy, and he still thinks it's 2000 Nitro, and that's why I love him.
It's great that he is committing to the bit, and he is staying true to the Buff Bagwell character, and what a great guy. And thanks to Buff, and make sure to follow him on all the social media. And make sure to follow us on Why It Ended Twitter, but also make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're going to get it updated a whole bunch this week. And if we get 500 subscribers, Robbie, what are we going to give the fans?
A bonus episode of Why It Ended. And in addition to that, guys, also don't forget Why It Ended on Instagram. Let's pump up our Instagram. And Matt, we also, pretty soon in the next few days, got some pro wrestling t-shirts getting dropped, don't we?
The pro wrestling tees thing is happening. And if you want maybe something like a Computers Buff Bagwell shirt, or maybe a Pod Runs Cold shirt, or maybe a Muhammad Hassan theme shirt,
maybe a chocolatey silky voice shirt.
Well, that's...
I don't want one of those.
Well, I can't wait to see them come out. We got the designs, and they are insane. You're going to love them. But let's talk a little bit about who we have today. So, of course, we got all that great stuff going on. The show is blowing up, and I'm really excited, Robbie, about our show today.
Today we have... someone who is, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that he's probably a little bit more PG. I don't know if he's going to drop as many F-bombs as Buff.
Did you just say you're going to go out on a limb?
No pun intended. I was going to say no pun intended. I wanted to make sure it meant the right thing. I know, and I didn't even mean to say that. But anyway, it's Zach Allen.
And what an incredible story. A lot of these stories have the same theme to them, you know, shot to the top, too much too soon. I think he's kind of the epitome of that, isn't he?
Yeah, well, that's what this show is all about. Hearing these guys, how did it happen so quick and why did it end so quick? I think people are going to be leaving this episode saying, holy shit, they did it again, because it's going to be a great story.
And you are going to be very surprised, I think, at what he has to say about Why It Ended. Zach Gowen coming up on Why It Ended right after this. And we are very happy to be joined with Zach Gowen. Zach, how's it going? How you doing today?
Doing well, Matt, Rob. Big fans of you both. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, so the way we do things here, I mean, I'm just going to ask you the first question that pretty much everyone asks when a podcast gets kicked off, and it's what originally, like at what age and how did you originally fall in love with pro wrestling?
I got to say, the first angle that like sunk its claws into me was when Earthquake debuted. And I think you guys remember Dino Bravo and Ultimate Warrior had this feud going on, and John Tenta, Earthquake, came out of the audience, and he happened to be a plant for Dino Bravo, and he attacked the Ultimate Warrior. And I remember just watching it, just going like, oh my God, this is insane. This is crazy. How did this happen? You know, and I mean, I was always a fan. I watched it every Saturday morning growing up. But that was like the first angle that sunk its claws into me in terms of my love of professional wrestling. My love turned, you know, from fandom into a passion to like almost an obsession by the time I was, you know, 16 years old. When I was eight, like 2 months or I'm sorry, 2 weeks removed from the amputation of my left leg, from having osteosarcoma, a form of bone cancer. The first day that they let me out of the hospital, my grandma ordered the Royal Rumble 92 for me. And for those 3 hours, you know, watching the Royal Rumble 1992, definitely the best Royal Rumble of all time. You know, I didn't feel the pain of not having my leg or the pain of cancer. I was just so caught up in the magic of that event. That really cemented my love and my passion and my obsession for professional wrestling. And from that point on, it was...
That's a big deal to get a pay-per-view order for you. Because back, dude, me and you, I think, are pretty much the same age. And I mean, that's hard. Like, I remember I used to beg for them. I mean, it was, what, $20, which was a lot of money back then.
Yeah, all it took was losing my leg to cancer.
and then you got what you wanted,
yeah,
right?
So was exactly. It worth it? Yeah, I would say so. I think it worked out in the end.
So Zach, I just want to ask you this. Of course, we're talking to Zach Gowan, and a lot of people just refer to you as that one-legged wrestler. How does it feel to be minimized or to be defined by that? Is it something you have as a badge of honor, or is it something that you think kind of paints an incomplete picture of who you are?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I've totally embraced who I am, and I'm 1,000% comfortable in my skin. And what missing my leg, what that allows me to do, that's just a tool that connects me to an audience. And it's a tool that allows me to stand out, and it's a tool that allows me to carry a message of hope and carry a message of overcoming. So I totally embrace who I am and what I've been able to do. And I quite frankly, I'm beyond blessed to have been a professional wrestler for the past 15 years, to be the first wrestler to wrestle on one leg without a prosthetic and to do the things I've done in this industry. You know, it's more than I could have ever asked for. The wrestling business doesn't owe anybody anything. Especially even a kid with one leg, you know, coming from Detroit. But for me, it's so funny because I remember number of years, maybe like 10 years ago, this other wrestler who I won't name, we were kind of ribbing each other back and forth a little bit backstage, and he was like, "Oh, you're just a gimmick. You only got to WWE because you have one leg." And I'm like, "Yeah, you're right." I go, "Dude, don't be a mark." I go, "Everybody's a gimmick. Hulk Hogan's a gimmick. The Rock's a gimmick. Andre the Giant."
Yeah, it is what it is, right?
Exactly. Like, if you can't embrace what you have and market it and use it as a tool to connect with an audience, then you have no business being a professional wrestler. And that's kind of how I see it. So to me, it's kind of from the outside on the surface looks like a disadvantage, but for me, it's always been advantageous to be me.
Well, yeah, definitely. In wrestling, it's so hard to make it. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of wrestlers. And I always tell guys, like when I do seminars and stuff, you got to find a way to stand out. And not that the situation I'm sure you originally wanted, but I mean, that's memorable. That stands out. There's no way people are going to forget, you know, someone like, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, you're right. It was definitely to your advantage.
Well, one of the great things about Zach, Robbie, is that because he already overcame so much with one leg, he never saw, from what I've heard, from the interviews I've heard, you never saw the one leg as being a disadvantage. What you saw as your disadvantage was your size. And so you were inspired by people like Rey Mysterio and the Hardys, and you came along at a time where the smaller wrestlers had a shot, and that was truly what inspired you, wasn't it?
1,000%. I came along at the right time. I remember being on an airplane when I was in WWE with the Brooklyn Brawler, and he said, "Listen, dude," he goes, if you were around 10 years ago, Vince wouldn't even touch you. He wouldn't look at you. He wouldn't have signed you. Like, this is pretty serendipitous. Just the timing of me coming to my own as a professional wrestler. You know, the first time I remember being memorized, I think it was the summer of 96, watching like Saturday night, WCW Saturday night, 605 on the Superstation, and seeing like Rey Mysterio versus Ultimo Dragon and just being absolutely blown away. I never really thought I could be a professional wrestler until I saw the smaller guys. And Rey Mysterio was that first wrestler who made it think that it was possible in my head that I could possibly do this. And so when the idea was planted in my head, I'm like, I'm going to do everything I can to get ready to be a professional wrestler. So I became a wrestler in high school. I learned how to train. I learned how to diet. I learned how to, you know, try to be disciplined. And I wanted to get my strength and my balance because a lot of my favorite wrestlers were amateur wrestlers. They had amateur wrestling in their background. And then, you know, it came the process of trying to find a school. I emailed Dory Funk and I emailed Les Thatcher. Those were the only two schools that I knew about. I knew about Les Thatcher in Heartland because of MTV True Life. I want to be a pro wrestler. and I know you guys remember that.
Of course.
Yeah. But Les never emailed me back. And Dory Funk was like, it might have been his wife who emailed me back saying, you know, hey, you know, follow your dreams, kid. Just kind of blew me off. But it wasn't until there was a local show, a local independent wrestling show, you know, 2 miles from my house that I stumbled upon, which kind of shows you that the marketing and promotion for independent wrestling hasn't really changed much in 15, 20 years. You know, me, the biggest fan in the world, I didn't even know this place existed. I stumbled by accident into this wrestling show. And I was just blown away that there was a real live wrestling ring and there was real wrestlers and there was about 17 fans in the audience. And I fell in love. And there's a little sign on the window that said wrestling school. So I'm like, this is it. This is where I'm going to train. And that's where I trained. And that's where it took off.
And the story's fantastic, Robbie. What happened with Zach is that Zach did the wrestling school thing where you give them the money and they're going to sign you up. And he showed up with his prosthetic and gave him the money, and they said okay, and he showed up the first day, took his leg off, and started to get to work. And the rest is history in a lot of way, because you go to TNA, and almost immediately you get a win over BG James, Road Dogg, and you're kind of in the mix right away. How did it feel to go ahead and just be placed in a great position in TNA almost right away?
Well, it was really unbelievable. And yes, I knew enough about life that, there was a chance they would deny me, they wouldn't allow me to participate in the training to be a wrestler, but I knew enough. I knew that if I gave them the full amount of money up front, that they weren't going to give it back to me once they found out.
Yeah, they ain't giving money back. It don't matter who, you could be an alien. You could be nobody in wrestling is giving you that money back.
Yeah. I mean, they let Robbie in. You know, they let Robbie in. So,
you know. God, I'll train a dog. Just pay me in full, man.
Hey, man, you know, payment's payment, brother. As long as the check cashes. But there was like this weird moment, like in a movie at a party when the record gets scratched off, when I popped my leg off. And then I just kind of rolled into the ring.
Awful silence. Everybody's staring.
100%. Yeah, it was like surreal. But to have like all those opportunities and success early on was it was amazing and it was awesome, and it almost feels like a lifetime ago, and it almost feels like I dropped acid and I lived a different life, you know, like I had like this weird like out of body experience, because I was so green and I didn't really understand the gravity of the gift that I was being given that early on. I didn't know any different. I mean, literally, I had 20 matches and then I was offered a WWE contract. And I was signed, you know, 9 months after my first match, I was signed by WWE sight unseen.
I just want to ask you, who contacted you from the WWE? Who called you? Who signed you? When did you first show up?
So the timeline, I was with TNA for 3 weeks. I had a dark match.
Were you signed to a contract with TNA or just doing matches?
No, I didn't sign it. They offered me a contract, but Truth Martini told me not to sign it. I did my dark match with Truth Martini, who he's the one who primarily trained me to be a wrestler. And I knew I was going to have my best match with him. So I brought him down to Nashville. And we had our dark match, and that night, they offered me a contract. So while this was happening, from what I understand, WWE was trying to sign me and ended up signing, the other guy. And,
who is the other guy?
It's, I can't remember his name. And I feel, Steve Chamberlain. Steve Chamberlain is his name. And it's so incredible because they signed Steve Chamberlain and then they release him, Steve Chamberlain, from being released, started a nonprofit that helps people get prosthetic legs. And full circle, I just got back from Orlando 2 months ago, and his nonprofit, his charity, helped me to get this brand new leg, my first new leg in 15 years.
Wow!
I haven't met him. I didn't get a chance to meet him while I was down there, and I hope to meet him and shake his hand because I don't know, man. Life is funny, how things kind of why things happen and what happens after, and what we do with, you know, either adversity or success.
You were actually the second one-legged wrestler.
I was the, yeah, he was training, but he wrestled with his prosthetic. He wrestled, and he was like 6'3", 250.
Now, why didn't they, do you know why WWE didn't want to keep him?
I was already in TNA. Maybe Matt knows. Maybe Matt's got the inside scoop on it.
Maybe I do. You know, I heard this story maybe about 6 months ago out of Bruce Pritchard's mouth himself at dinner, and he told it on Something to Wrestle With. And basically, they heard there was this young kid who was really good in TNA, described him, and said, sign him. And apparently, Johnny Ace went and signed the wrong one-legged wrestler. And
unbelievable.
Then Bruce is describing him to Johnny Ace, and I can't, you have to listen to Bruce talk about it, but he's like, you know, Johnny's like, I don't know what you're talking about. The kid's like 35, not 19. And he's like, I think you got the wrong guy. And so... This
that poor guy, man, just calling him a day later and canning him.
Right, and then
dude, and getting the rug out from under him like right. That. From all accounts, he's a great dude, I'm grateful for him because if it wasn't for him and his organization, I wouldn't have this brand new fancy leg that's helping me get around.
That's the best part of this story. Now is not the funny thing that the WWE hired the wrong quote one-legged wrestler unquote, but the fact that this fellow Steve Chamberlain helped you get your first prosthetic leg in 15 years. That's amazing.
Isn't that cool? Isn't that something? I mean, this leg by itself costs like, I think like 45 grand. And insurance covers 80%. And I'm responsible for the rest of the 20%. So 20%, I think it's around 8 grand I'm responsible for. And to be honest with you, I don't know about you, Rob. Maybe you, Robbie. But I don't know about you, Matt. I don't have 8 grand just chilling in my pocket. Just
hey, 8 grand is 8 grand.
That's a lot of money. And then his organization helped cover those costs, man. And I'm so grateful for that.
So eventually they signed the right guy. They know it's you. And in May 15th, 2003, you made your debut at the top of the card, involved with Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, and Sean O'Hare. What was the process of you starting? What was the process of you being told that you were going to be put in this angle? And how quick did all that happen?
Yeah. So that was insane.
No pressure at all. First match, you're out there with Hogan. No big deal.
You know? Yeah. So the process started back in January of 2003 when Johnny Ace called me and offered me a contract, and they FedExed me a contract the next day, and I signed that with them. I called Jeff Jarrett, and I informed Jeff that I was going to sign with WWE, and in my head, I'm like, oh, okay, well, they'll probably send me to Louisville to developmental, and I'll probably live down there, and I'll start there. And that was the thought process, but nobody called me. Nobody kept up with me. I just literally sat at home.
I bet people at home didn't even believe. Like, did you tell people you're signed to WWE? And they're like, yeah, right, dude. You ain't signed to WWE.
Yeah. Everybody. When I got to – I tell you what, man, that was a good moment when I got to quit my job at Joe's Produce, bagging groceries. You know what I mean? Because WWE was sending me a check every Monday. That was a pretty good feeling. But I sat at home, and then in May, They flew me out to Stamford and gave me a tour of the office out there, and I met with the writing team, and I pitched a few ideas about coming in, and my idea was just kind of be presented as like kind of like how I wanted to recreate. Basically, I wanted to recreate the 1-2-3 kid. And then come in and lose and get beat up, but then all of a sudden, you know, have a win out of nowhere that we can go from there. And that was my idea. And that's kind of where I thought we were going. And then I get on the plane to come home. I land back in Detroit. I check my voicemail. It's from Tom Pritchard, who says, he goes, you know, he said, "Hey Zach, thanks for coming out. Very nice to meet you. You start next Tuesday at TV. We're going to debut you in a Piper's Pit with Hulk Hogan and Sean O'Hare." And I'm like, what? Like, what the fuck? But yeah, so then I show up, and it's my first time meeting everybody. Completely just overwhelmed, and my eyes were just big as saucers, and I was just like in a dreamlike state. And I just didn't want to mess up. You know, I was so scared. I was so nervous. I was just so intimidated by the whole production, you know, being, you know, 20 years old and being around wrestling for about a year at that point. And then I'm, you know, meeting with Hulk Hogan and Piper and Vince and everybody else. And it was just incredible. But I was scared.
What were your interactions with Vince McMahon like when you first met him?
Yeah. So all of my interactions with Vince were great. He was super nice, and he was excited, and he was really helpful in terms of what we're going to do that night, what the angle was, what the promo was. He was a pleasure to be around. I never saw Vince like the business guy Vince, you know, Vince running the WWE Vince. I just saw my interactions with Vince were with Vince as the performer. And same thing with Stephanie and Shane.
Now, would you guys actually go through it in the ring? Walk through what you were going to do, or what is it would just be talked about in his office or something?
So if we're going to do promos, we would talk about it in his office. If there was going to be any kind of physical interaction, we would lay it out in the ring beforehand. Yeah, because Vince and me, I'm green as dog shit. And Vince is not a professional wrestler. So his movements and his instincts are kind of different, so to speak. And me, I was just brand new. So they wanted to really kind of produce and make sure that everybody was on their mark and everybody knew their cue. So if there's anything physical, we definitely bogarted the ring and worked that out before the show.
So one of the things that comes across in a lot of the interviews I've heard with you is the word heat. You had a lot of heat with the other wrestlers. And a lot of it now, you kind of put the blame on yourself. Too much too soon. You were young. But in listening to other interviews, I kind of heard a common theme, a common thread that maybe some of the heat was because a lot of the wrestlers didn't want to put over a one-legged wrestler and didn't think a one-legged wrestler was good for the business. How much of that do you think contributed to the way you were perceived in the back?
Yeah, I don't know, because I've never heard that from anybody. And I advise everybody to go back to the archives and check out the Muhammad Hassan interview you guys did. I listened to that, and he talked about how, you know, any new guy coming in is going to be under the microscope, and any kind of misstep is going to be magnified. And that certainly was the case with me, but at the same time, I didn't do myself any favors by my actions or my attitudes.
Did you have any disagreements with anyone, or arguments, or like, what was your attitude? Not shaking hands, or
it wasn't that. It was just kind of like, I felt so insecure, and I felt like I didn't deserve to be there, that I almost overcompensated trying to fit in, which in turn got me heat and then pushed me away from everybody else.
Comfortable in conversations and stuff, like thinking just, you're kind of already friends with people.
Exactly. Too comfortable, too friendly, like on my phone in the back, not watching the matches, just trying
Bro, you're 20 years old, you know, you're still a kid, you know?
Yeah. You know, it was funny. I was just thinking about this today. I was getting a ton of heat, like quickly too, because I wasn't there very long. And then somebody is, God bless their heart, man, Rhino and little Guido did their best to look after me. I didn't take a lot of their advice. But they were definitely in my corner. And Canyon, too, God rest his soul, helped out a lot. And somebody smartened me up. They're like, hey, you know, Stevie Richards used to have a ton of heat. And now he doesn't. Why don't you go talk to him to see if he can kind of put this out? And I'm like, that's a great idea. So I went to Stevie Richards and I'm like, hey, man, how do I get rid of this heat? And he goes, all right, well, he goes, this is what I did. He goes, I moved myself to Louisville and I basically enrolled and joined all of the classes and worked my, you know, at OVW and worked myself back up until I gained the respect of the locker room. So I'm like, dude, thank you. That's an amazing idea. And that's what I did. I packed my bags. I moved to Louisville. I told the office, and I went to Louisville and I got drunk the night before my first day in Louisville and I overslept my alarm. And then I showed up like an hour late to practice. And then I didn't get in the ring because I didn't know if I should have gotten in the ring with the new guys or this or that. And so the perception was, okay, well, Zach is a big star. He thinks he's better than everybody. He misses his first class. And then now he gets here and he's sitting out, not even participating.
Made it even worse. Like,
Jesus Christ. Like this, the same shovel that I used to dig myself in this hole, I keep using it more and more to get myself out, but I keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And then I'm like, at a certain point, there's nothing I could do. Right. You know, Rob, you know, people who have so much heat that no, right or wrong, no matter what they do, it's going to get them more heat. Like they've reached outer limits of like the atmosphere for heat. They're in outer space, lack of gravity, lack of oxygen, all heat right by the sun. And that's exactly where I was at a certain point. then they had to, they were going to put me in wrestler's court. Dude, this is amazing. They were going to put me in wrestler's court. Canyon, the man with a heart of gold, always helping out, was going to be my lawyer. And then the week before wrestler's court, Canyon called me up and said, hey, man, I can't be your lawyer because it's going to get me too much heat to be your lawyer for wrestler's court.
What happened to you, man? What happened?
It was unbelievable.
If you look at this, though, let's look at this in perspective. I know that at the age you are now and what you've been through, you want to hold yourself accountable, much like Muhammad Hassan, Mark Capone does, hold yourself accountable. But looking at it in perspective, you were 20 years old. Like 20 years old, you're a year and a month off of your first match ever. And doesn't it behoove the company a little bit to guide and nurture and kind of teach this new young wrestler so he can be a big part of their future? Or is it a lot like Muhammad Hassan told us, where it is trial by fire and you either make it or you don't?
That's it. It's a business, you know, and they're there to put out a product that's going to connect with fans. It's going to make them money. Sometimes it's a cold world, man. But that's the nature of the wrestling business. And that's the nature of any business that you go into. Hindsight being 2020, I would have loved for them to kind of guide me, you know, through, send me to developmental, sit me down, kind of open my eyes to like what's going to happen, how my life's going to change, how to interact with people, how to be an adult, how to be responsible, how to carry myself as a WWE superstar.
I want to talk a little bit more about the highlights of your career. And one of those things, of course, was after the Piper and Hogan thing, it led to a feud with you and Mr. McMahon. And one of those things was a handicap match. And Vince made sure to mention it was the first, quote, real handicap match. How do you feel about the way that you were portrayed or treated on screen as an amputee?
You know, I never really had any issue with it. Maybe some people did. Maybe some people were offended, but like to me, I saw it all as a wrestling angle and I saw it as heat.
Yeah, it's pro wrestling.
Yeah, man. Like this is where the heat's in my leg and the heat's in my size and my age. And so the idea, like if we didn't have all of that heat, then the reaction to me beating the Big Show in that handicap match to earn my WWE contract wouldn't have been as big. And that connection wouldn't have been as strong. And so that's kind of the teeter-totter aspect of professional wrestling and what makes it work. And that's kind of where the magic lies. So I was totally okay with, I was never really offended by anything. I wrestled John Cena once, and he rapped. This is back when he rapped. Right. He had a rap for me before our match while we were in the ring. And he ran, you know, to his credit, he ran the rap by me and made sure that what he said didn't cross the line or go too far, which I thought he didn't have to do that. You know, I thought that was incredibly nice and generous for him to do that.
Especially when you had as much heat as you did. What did he need to do?
Oh, dude, he could have eaten me alive to the point where I would have just cried. You know what I mean? Like on national television. And same thing with Brock. Brock could have fucking murdered me. And he would have gotten a standing ovation when he got to the back. But Brock, to his credit, kept me safe. So I'm so grateful for those guys. I never took any offense to anything because, like Rob said, it's professional wrestling and this is what it is, man. It's about getting that heat.
The Lesnar match and, of course, you getting thrown down a flight of stairs looked pretty brutal to me.
Here's what I'm saying. I wouldn't like to, I'm 35 years old. I wouldn't want to have that match now.
Right. But when you're 20?
Dude, when you're 20 and your body's fresh and you're just starting out and you're at Joe Louis Arena, the same arena that, you know, 2 years before you watched SmackDown Live, you know, in the 189th row, like in front of my friends and family and all that, like I didn't feel any pain that night. And to Brock's credit, like I said, he kept me 100% safe. To the point was where he was supposed to give me 3 power bombs, like a triple power bomb. And after the first one, he felt that I was in danger. He felt like my body go limp for a second. And so he put me down pretty gently for the second one. And he didn't do a third one because he felt like I was kind of in an unsafe position, which I'm so incredibly grateful for. All of that was purely show. It looked really bad. Because I think of the amount of blood, that was so fun. That was the first time I ever gigged in my life on SmackDown on national television. I never gigged before, and so they trusted me enough to get color, and I took that seriously, maybe a little too seriously.
Have you ever done it again since?
I think maybe like 10 years ago or something. But
I've never done it in my life. So how nervous were you going into that?
Dude, I was shaking, man. I was shaking, you know, and I took like 3 or 4 aspirin to thin out my blood and to get that good color. And I was, you know,
what if it goes wrong or what if you don't cut yourself right? Doesn't that like freak you out? I always thought about that, you know, like,
yeah, I was more worried about not getting enough color. And like, my mindset was I have to go all out because I'm trying to earn the respect of the locker room. And so I was worried about that. I wouldn't do that now. And I wouldn't want my kids doing it, you know, when they get older. I think it's kind of dumb, but in terms of like, you know, working with those guys, it was safe. Everybody kept me safe. And when they didn't have to, and that's what really means a lot to me.
Was there any particular wrestler in the back that you had a particularly hard time with? You know, you had heat in the back, but who did you have heat with?
Yeah, I remember one time I got into it with Orlando Jordan, because he started using this neck breaker for finish that I was using in all of my matches, I go, hey man, I walked up to him and I go, hey, can you come up with a new finish? I'm asking him to change the finish.
Dude, you're making me hate you. Oh my yeah. God. Are you like, Matt, do you hear this guy?
Nah, I was like, hey, bro. I was like, hey brother, that ain't going to work for me. You something else.
Jesus. What are you going to tell Hogan next? Not that he can't drop the leg. Oh my man, God.
I go, listen, Hogan, it's arguably more impressive me doing it on one leg than you do it on two legs. See what I'm saying? So if you could just dial it back a little bit.
You really went up to Orlando Jordan, who's a legit badass dude, and went up to him and said, "Hey, man, can you not do that finish?"
Dude, he's a bad dude, man. And yeah, he's like, "What?" And they got kind of weird. And I go, "Listen, I go, I have one leg. I can do about four moves, like effectively that are believable. Like this is one of them." And then he's like, "No, that's what they gave me. This is what I'm going to do." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And then so it got kind of weird with him. But beyond that, like, there wasn't, like, any, like shouting matches or confrontations or anything like that.
Matt, do you feel you would be hated in a wrestling locker room?
I would definitely be in the same boat as him. I wouldn't know what to do. I'd start trying too hard, and everybody would hate me. I'd have no idea what the hell is going on. I mean, they all hate me already. Bruce Pritchard already hates me, so... You know,
you have heat in the podcast world.
Oh my God, more than anybody. But speaking of this kind of heat, how much of it could you change if you were to go back in time? What could you have done differently, do you think, to kind of reduce that and make your time easier in the locker room?
Oh man, if I came in now, like at 20 years old, with the knowledge I possess now, it'd be 1,000% different. Just in terms of like the respect that I have for wrestling, the ability to carry myself as a man, the ability to honor my commitments and show up and to be of service and all of that, I would be an asset to any locker room I'm in. So it would be 1,000,000% different.
So were you unreliable?
In what ways?
Like were you late? Were you not on time? Did you not be where you're supposed to be generally?
Sometimes, yeah. And then, you know, partying a little too much, sleeping in a little too much.
I thought you were a nice guy. I'm hearing all these things and I'm just like, wow. Oh, he's like, yeah, you know, I was late like 10 or 15 times and they got on me about it, you
listen,
know.
Listen, I only had 20 appearances. I was on time about four or five times. So, I mean, how bad could it be? You know what I'm saying?
So you debut at the top of the card. You're over as hell. You're so over that Vince plucks you out of angle with Hogan to work with him. And you're doing matches with a Big Show. You're involved with Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar and Stephanie and all this stuff. And then you start losing some matches. You start being placed in out of the top ranks. You started being treated like a regular wrestler. And you started kind of being moved down the card. What was that process like in... Did anybody say anything to you about it?
No, I just felt like there was no place to go. And they didn't, after that initial angle with Vince, and then we did that thing with Brock, I don't think creative really knew what to do with me. We talked about a few things about me turning heel. So I just think they didn't know what to do. I think the heat was so much in the locker room that nobody wanted me there. And I think mixed with creative, not really knowing, I don't think they could have really invested in me anymore with what the conditions were in the locker room with the office and with the rest of the guys. And so I think I just kind of floundered for a little bit. Then I got hurt. And then they kind of used that as an opportunity or a window to fire me. And so it was just kind of like a mixture of those components ultimately led to me being fired.
Who were some of the guys you would work with on live events?
I worked with Matt Hardy the most. And he pushed me. And we did a lot. And I learned a ton from Matt.
I heard Matt talking about working with you and about how he wasn't necessarily pleased that he had to work with you and that he might have been an asshole to you in the back a little bit. You didn't feel that way at all?
Yeah, he was a little bit. I didn't take offense to it. I kind of understood, you know, where he came from. And then we had a pay-per-view match, No Mercy 2003. And he just beat the living dog shit out of me. but I mean, that's what it was. And we worked really hard, but still he was doing business. And nobody, like, you got to understand, like, once the bell rings and we're on TV and there's a live crowd, it's all about business, man. We don't, like, it's going to reflect poorly on him if he just eats me alive, yeah. beats the crap out of me, leaves me laying. Like yeah. he's gonna look like an unprofessional. Everybody's there to do business, and that's what it was. But yeah, no, me and Matt, we weren't like friends. We didn't get along all that well. We worked out a few times together, ate some dinner together, and all that. But yeah, I could definitely sense that he didn't like putting me over. And he didn't, not because I had one leg or anything like that. It's just he didn't like me, and he didn't like the position that he was in at the time. But I consider Matt a friend now, and I love him and his wife and his kids, and I love what he's doing on TV now.
So Matt Hardy was the person you worked the most with. He wasn't necessarily the nicest person. And you got a chance to wrestle No Mercy 2003, where you got to win, which is probably why he beat the hell out of you. And then you got injured, and then you were given your release. What did it look like? Who told you? How did you take it when you were given the news?
All right, I'm gonna give Rob more reason to hate me.
Oh my god! I can't hate you anymore, man.
Bro, I don't know if I've ever told this story before. So I get hurt. They send me home.
How were you hurt, real quick? Just
I got knocked out and I got a concussion.
Got it. From who?
It was from Tajiri's henchmen, Ryan Sakota and Jimmy Yang.
Got it.
It was their debut. They were hyped up. I'm top heavy. I came down hard. It was a wrap. So they sent me home to kind of heal up and clear my head. And then I'm home for like a month or two, and while I'm home, I meet a girl, right?
Oh, God.
And I was like, you know exactly where this is going.
This is real.
I meet a girl, right? And I'm in love, bro. Like, this is the real deal, Holyfield. Like, I'm in love. And so Johnny Ace calls me, and he's like, hey, need you to, you know, I'm going to help you out. You have heat. You're away a little bit. That's going to help out, but you got to move back to Louisville. Then we're going to start you from the ground up. And then that's going to be, you know, your ticket back into WWE. And I'm like, Johnny, listen, I go,
oh my God, I don't even want to hear this.
It hurts.
Let me tell you, Johnny Ace, how it's going to be.
I go, Johnny, I go, listen, brother. I go, I met a girl. I'm going to stay here in Detroit, and I will train at the local wrestling school, so I will be in shape and ready to go. When you guys have something for me, just call me, and I'll be at the next team.
Holy shit.
Oh my God. I mean, did he fire you right there on the spot?
He didn't. No.
You know what's so cool about you that you're laughing about it now? Because it is funny. Like, it's good to show. You know what I mean? You can look back and get a kick out of it.
To be quite honest, I don't see that Buff Bagwell would see anything wrong with that.
He wouldn't.
It's so ridiculous to look back.
Let me ask you this. Did you actually say, and this is a big, this makes a big difference here. Do you actually use the word brother when you talk to him?
I probably do.
Oh my God. This is unreal, man.
Yeah.
They should serve you heel. You would have been the biggest heel. I mean, all you had to do was act like your real self. Good God.
Bro.
It sounds to me like that kind of statement of Johnny Ace kind of tells us everything we need to know about why you had so much heat with everybody.
Dude, that's it in a nutshell. But actually getting fired is kind of interesting because they called me up a few months later, and I'm just sitting at home collecting paychecks.
So what was his reaction to that, though? He was just like, okay, you could stay, no biggie. Like, how did he react to that?
He's like, all right, fine. Thanks. Then he hung up, and I've never talked to him since. So they call me up. Somebody from the office calls me up a month or two later and says, hey, listen, we're going to fly you to Stanford. Talk about your future. And so the following week, they fly me to Stanford, and I meet with Jim Ross, who fires me. And then I get back into a town car. They take me to the airport and I fly home. And that's how I got fired. They flew me out to fire me in person, which is kind of strange because I don't think they do that for a lot of people.
But Jim couldn't have been more kind of nice about me being fired. You know, he's like, hey, listen, too much too soon. You got an attitude problem. Go out there, work, cut your teeth, you know, be a heel, be a baby face, work on your body. Door's always open, you know, and we'll be glad to talk in the future. And that was pretty much the extent of the conversation I had with Jim Ross. But I've always thought it was strange that they flew me out to fire me in person instead of just doing it over the phone or faxing me something, you know. I don't know. I thought it was weird.
Did you try and fight it? Did you say, like, listen, bro, that's not a good decision to fire me, man. I'm the guy here.
I go, listen, JR. I go, listen, brother. I go, this ain't gonna work for me. Me not working here ain't gonna work for me. Okay, so we're gonna have to
completely thrown off though. Like, was that like a big shock?
No, I felt it was coming. I felt it was coming. However, it was incredibly surreal and weird, and I was left feeling very empty, and very pissed off, embarrassed, because I wasn't fired because of my lack of talent or my lack of ability to do my job. I was fired because of my personality. And to me, that was more embarrassing and hurtful than anything, you know? So I was shell shocked. And you have to understand, I'm 20 years old and I have my identity wrapped up into this persona, into being a WWE superstar. And all of a sudden that's taken away from me. I don't know who I am. I don't have any identity. And so I was lost, and I was lost for a long time after that too. But thankfully that's not the case anymore. And I'm not, you know, what I do for a living doesn't define who I am. And that's a really good feeling to be kind of where I'm at now. But for a long time, it was painful and embarrassing, and I was lost.
At the time when you were fired, was your anger more towards them because you felt you were misunderstood, or did you immediately think I fucked up?
No, it was, I blamed everybody else, man. I pointed the finger at everybody else. They didn't give me a fair shot. It's because of this. F that guy, F this guy. You know, and it went outward, and it wasn't until years later where I could kind of, you know, reflect and kind of take like an objective inventory of my personality and realize, oh, I had like a major, huge part in all of this, you know, and that just speaks to the defects of that I have, you know, in my character. Immediately it was all the fingers are pointing at everybody else except me. I was a victim in that scenario at the time.
And I'm surprised doing this podcast you didn't make any demands or anything.
It's so fun. I'm like the easiest guy to work with. I'm the easiest guy to talk to. I'm always gonna offer my time if I can be of service in any way, shape, or form. And it's funny kind of running into guys when in WWE, like they're like, I don't even recognize this guy anymore. They're like, you're not the kid that, you know, we used to travel together. And like, no, man, I'm a 35-year-old father. I pay taxes. Yeah. I raise my kids, and I'm integrated into the fabric of my community. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a maturity and there's a growth there that kind of happens, or at least it's supposed to happen, you know, to all of us. But yeah, it's I tell you what, man, life's a lot better now than it used to be. When initially it happened, I was lost, and my head was spinning for a very long time.
After this, did you ever try to get in, like, you know, to talk to TNA or anything after WWE ended to try and get back in with them?
Yeah, man. I don't know how long this podcast is.
No, I mean, if you could just do a quick little answer for it, you know.
Yeah, for sure. No, I did some shots with TNA like a year or two later, and I burned that bridge pretty good.
Matt, we'd love to hear that.
So we heard why it ended in WWE, and I think the answer is because you were an asshole. So why did it end for you in TNA?
Same answer, brother. The
exact same answer. Well, let's get some specifics. So when you came out the second time to TNA, because again, and it's weird because I follow, I don't really remember that. Was this when they were in Orlando now?
Yeah, they were in Orlando. This is 2005.
Okay.
I think they just started with the octagon ring, the six-sided ring.
What did you say for your matches? You needed a four-sided ring or something?
I go, this isn't handicap accessible. What the fuck, man? Want me to get my lawyers involved? No, I came down and I was super over, and it was supposed to be a one-time thing, and they invited me back the next week, and I did all of the tapings, and everything was good, and it looked like they were going to offer me something, and they put me on this media call. I don't know whose idea it was to put me on a media call with anybody, but they put me on this media call, and I didn't really understand what a media call was, but I knew that Jeff Jarrett was on the line. So in front of all the media and in front of all the other wrestlers and in front of Dixie Carter, I was like, hey, Jeff, I go, I already have this commitment in Japan next month, so I'm not going to be able to make TVs. He goes, okay, thanks, Zach. You can hang up now. And I hung up, and that was it. Oh,
and then you were never there again?
Yeah, no, I think I did some appearance, like one-offs for them. When they came to Detroit and maybe a few other times. But
so I think, you know, Buff Bagwell last week said the reason it ended in one word was computers. I think this week it might be telephones.
Yeah, man. And not being able to be a human being. That's a big detriment. That's a bigger handicap than having one leg. I promise you that.
Well, it sounds like to me that you have overcome what you call the bigger handicap. You said the bigger handicap was your personality, not having one leg. And it sounds like things are going really great for you. So what are you up to these days, Zach?
Everything, man. My plate is so incredibly full and filled with things that fill me on a very spiritual level. I'm blessed to be able to travel the country with Cool Speak, which is my speaking agency. And I'm in schools, elementary, middle, high school, colleges, working with kids, working with teachers, working with parents, in terms of empowering our youth by sharing my story, by sharing some of the mistakes that I made, some of the lessons that I've learned, and some of the ways that I've been able to overcome what life has dealt to me. I'm able to do that. I teach DDP yoga 4 to 5 times a week here in Detroit. I'm a certified instructor. I'm on a competitive sled hockey team, and I'm still wrestling. I still keep a pretty active schedule in professional wrestling. But I'm busy, and I'm raising my 5 and my 2-year-old, and I'm married to the most beautiful woman who I've ever laid eyes on. And I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I say it all the time. I go, nobody's got it better than me. You know, I'm like the one-legged Forrest Gump, dude. Like I do everything, and life is great. And I'm just incredibly grateful, and I'm blessed because a lot of people who have been through what I've been through aren't here anymore. And they don't have a voice, and they don't have the ability to share their story and to be of use, not only to themselves, but to the people around them. And I get to live that every single day, man. So I'm beyond blessed, man.
Well, that's awesome.
Well, of course, if you want to book Zach to do some inspirational speaking for your school or anything else, you go to coolspeak.net. And of course, Zach is also involved in rompglobal.org, which is an organization that helps amputees in developing countries. And is there a way to get a hold of you online? Do you have a Twitter or email, or how do people book you?
Yeah, just go to ZachGowan.com, and obviously all the social media stuff. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the whole thing, man. Just search Zach Gowan, and I'll be there.
And Jim contacted him. He won't make demands anymore. He's not the same a-hole that he used to be when he was 20. So it's easy to talk to him and book him on a show, guys.
1,000%. Thank God. Well, life—it's so funny. Life has a funny way of humbling everybody at a certain point, doesn't it?
Hey, well, like I said, I think it's awesome that you know you could just look back at it and totally laugh and joke on it because that's what it's all about. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Because that wasn't always the case. I used to carry that around, that shame, that guilt, and that all that shit would just weigh me down and affect me not being able to be present in my life at that moment. And at a certain point, you just kind of have to let it go and not take yourself too seriously and laugh at yourself and do things that feed you on a spiritual level. And I'm grateful that I've been put in a position to do that. I wouldn't change anything because all my experiences led me to this point where I'm at now. And for that, I'm really, really happy. It's fun. It's really fun to take a trip. And I want to thank you guys for having me on, because to me, it's a lot of fun taking a trip down memory lane and then even reliving some of these mistakes or some of these points in my life that I'm not exactly proud of, but to be able to do it in like a fun and healthy way, to me, that helps me out. So I appreciate being on with you guys.
Hey, well, thanks for being a guest, man. And I think a lot of people, like you said, you definitely revealed at least a handful of things that you haven't before. So I think people are going to be super entertained listening to your story. And if they had heard some of it, it's always great to hear it again. But no, we appreciate it, man.
Amen. Thank you.
You know what, Matt? One of my favorite things about this show is hearing stories that I either didn't know or thought I knew. Like, I in no way would have thought, because I had never heard this before, I would not have thought that Zach Allen had a problem in the locker room. I don't know how I didn't know that, but I didn't. I thought it was just his angle ran its course. They had nothing to do with him, and it ended. I had no clue it was because he was a big asshole in the locker room. Did you know this?
I heard it, and I think I heard him say it, but the thing is that got me was the extent of how big of an asshole he was. Like,
oh my God, know, not moving to Louisville? Has he gone crazy?
Right, where he goes, Johnny, I'll be at TV, and call me when you need me.
Dude, I got this girl, and I mean, come on.
But
he's awesome.
But the great thing is I gave him a hard time, but you know, I know Zach is a big fan of the show, and Zach gets it. Like, Zach has changed his life, and dude was 20 years old, and he was 9 months out of his first match when he got signed.
And just still a kid, you know? Like, you're going into all this thrown at you at once, and then you probably got friends at home saying, dude, you're working with Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. You can run that place. And, you know, a 20-year-old's probably like, yeah, and that's why he's going up to people saying, don't do that move and don't do that. You know what I mean? It's just, it messes with your head.
How do you not feel like you're the shit in that situation? How do you not feel that
way? Yeah, it's how do you, exactly, you know? Like he said, if he would have had some life coaching, maybe he would have woke up a little. But, I mean, it is what it is. But the cool thing is, you know, like we like to have guests that are all in a positive place now. Now he's in a positive place. So, you know, it's cool that he can laugh about it.
Well, it's cool that we're laughing with him and not at him, like some people.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, one thing is for sure is that people are enjoying this podcast. We got great downloads and great feedback, of course, off of last week. And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We want to give you that bonus show, guys. At 500 subscribers, we will drop a bonus show. And we are at Why It Ended. Robbie, what you got going on these days?
This weekend, you could catch me in Albany, New York at Heroes Hideout for an afternoon autograph signing. And then at night, at World of Hurt Wrestling in Whitehall, New York. And then Saturday, I fly to Chicago for LOW Wrestling.
And of course, anything you need to know about Robbie, including his Fight TV show or his Muscle and Fitness feature every week, you can find out at robbie-e.com or reach him at Robbie E Impact on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. And I'm at Matt Coon Music on Twitter. And this is Why It Ended.
The rule of NLW.